Kappa-C's. Kappa-C's is one of the this is really just the imprint of a bottle cap. This isn't Kappa-C's. Kappa-C's is something that comes with people who have HIV who get that particular intercurrent illness. But the dream is almost saying, this is Kappa-C's. This is the malignancy. The malignancy is internalized homophobia. The AIDS is just a minor spin-off of that and not the last one. This is the malignant thing. This is a psychosocial malignancy, and he's looking at a psychosocial malignancy that is imposed on him. And that's where, and he does, and his only hope is that he can know it and disidentify with it. So it seems to me this is sort of, you might say, the not self in a dream. This is finding what isn't the self and finding how your self feels about that. The he in the dream is the healthy self whose integrity has been compromised by the branding. You see? So that's what the work of analysis often is undoing the false self-organization so that a real self can come forth. So you spend as much time in analyzing dreams as getting clear about what isn't the self as you do about finding what is the self. So I hope that speaks to you.
It's like his dream ego was without affect.
Yes. Now, that's where some therapy had to be done, you might say. The dream ego is just looking at it. It sees it for what it is, but there is a missing affective piece, right? So there one works therapeutically with association and tries. It's sort of a tricky thing. I mean, I don't want to impose my own feelings, but I do want to dialogue with him and uncover what he must feel about it. And so I do a certain amount of priming of the pump. I hope what comes out in the end is not just compliance, but his own real feelings. It impressed me, it seemed to me that it was the case.
Did he die?
Huh? He eventually did die, yes. He was a very remarkable person, and he had a very remarkable death that left a lot of people feeling. He had a therapeutic effect on me. Going through the death experience with him actually had the effect of initiating me into dying. I think at that time in my life, I, like a lot of relatively young psychiatrists, was working with a relatively young population and was, unlike other physicians, pretty much not exposed to death. So the HIV epidemic, you know, the AIDS epidemic really led to some encounters with death in my practice. And he particularly showed me that death could be met. There was a point at which we stopped the heroic struggle, and he said, I am going to die. And he helped me move away a little bit from the hero and accept when death comes. I must say he met it in a remarkable way. And it left me much less frightened about my own death someday. I mean, it just made a difference. He was a person who made a difference. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Maybe we take a little break now, and then we'll come back for the last bit. Where are we? Oh, we've had our break. We take some questions, I think, just for the rest of the time, dialogue or questions. We have about 25 minutes, and you're probably filled with things. Yeah.
Yeah. John, I want to try to put together two things that you have been talking about. One of which is the ambivalence towards the self.
Yes.
And the other one is in talking about the dream ego as having self-characteristics.
Yes.
And then the affect that may be happening.
Yes.
For instance, I can think of many times in my dreams when, you know, something that truly, when I go back and I've worked on that dream, that truly was an image of that wholeness of the self. And yet, my dream ego in the dream was going, get it away from me.
Yes.
So trying to put that ambivalence with kind of that idea of what is the dream ego in the context of the dream.
Yes. Okay, so where do you go with that? What is, what would you, what would you like to take that?
I guess I would like to take it in trying to look at my dream ego in dreams and the confusion that I can have around affect that takes place in the dream that then I have to work with when I'm working with my dream.
Do you dare to bring an example? It's always hard to share a dream in public, but you're welcome if you want to.
Well, certainly. Well, actually, interestingly, there's a dream, a baseball dream. It's so funny you had the baseball dreams and all of the wonderful kind of associations with that, because I had a fairly big dream. It was a baseball dream. And in it, what was taking place was I was in the outfield trying to stop the runs that were happening, the other team. And so I'm in the outfield making what I consider to be in the dream fairly amazing plays and throws to home, and there's still the runs aren't stopping because my teammates aren't making the plays. And so there was real affect in that dream that, you know, here I'm supposedly doing the right things to stop this from taking place, but it's still happening.
The teammates are not somehow following through on your side to make it happen.
Yeah.
You're doing what you need to do, but you're not getting the support you need from the rest of the team.
Yes.
And you don't like that.
No, I did not like that. In the dream, the affect was very much.
Right. Now let's suppose that you in the dream are taking up the position of the self. Suppose the self is saying, I'm doing what I can. I'm sending up these dreams. I'm sending up the symptoms. I'm sending up the feelings. But the persona, the shadow, the anima of this man, the rest of the team, isn't cooperating. So the self is feeling frustrated with the rest of your act. Seems to me that's often a condition that we find ourselves in, that the self is mad at us. And it's at those times that we either get depressed or anxious in waking life. And you would, for me to analyze it, well, now why would the self be so mad at you? I mean, the rest of the team seems to me the rest of you. The fact that they're adversarial, there's another team that you may be playing against, well, that makes sense. I mean, we all play against the other team, the world or our parents or oppressive forces or forces. But the problem isn't the other team. The problem is your team. And the rest of your team isn't doing its job. So that would make, so I would take this as a self-confrontation and say, well, where is that true? How is that true? And where am I ignoring, making it harder for the self to do its job or not letting, or letting the self do all the work and not being synergistic with my own efforts? I mean, there are people who come to analysis once a week or twice a week and kind of get dialyzed, you know, the self gets its moment and they don't listen the rest of the week. They don't do anything with what the self is saying. So it's palliative to come to analysis, but it's not curative. It's not curative unless, so that would be how I'd read the dream, if it were my dream.
Just for clarification, you were talking about the review you wrote of Hilda's book, and you said there was a lot of animus material in that review.
Oh, I was speaking, I was trying to, first of all, I was being provocative, I was trying to point out men have animuses
too. Well,
that's
what I wanted to ask you. That's a new one for me. Okay, that's brand new.
Well, I like to say it's 3-1 that a man has three times out of four it's an anima, but the fourth time it's an animus. All I can say is that I had an opinionated idea that his opinion was wrong, let's put it that way. And also the dictionary definition of animus is a certain hostility, so.
Okay.
So I'm sort of fooling around with the word there, but.
Oh, okay. Because.
But I don't take the dogma that only women have an animus and only men have an anima. On the other hand, I do see that the animus is probably more of a woman's thing, and maybe